interface nicely with others, and he is able to deal with his attachments, and he is able to remove the attachments. Now, the beauty of the Vedic system is this, if it's understood properly, is that non-Vedic systems don't deal with a way of freeing yourself from material attachments, generally speaking. They just don't deal with that. And a difficulty comes is, one, to get rid of it, you have to know what it is. Does that make some sense? Like if you go into your kitchen and people say there's a big mess in your kitchen, and you go into the kitchen and everything to you looks fine, will anything get clean? No. So you have to know what is the problem to fix it. So that's the whole point. The Vedic system teaches you what is human life, what is human desires, what are human needs, what are human endeavors. By that, then you can know what is human life, so you can simultaneously fulfill those needs and remove them at the same time. So it uses the method of a thorn with a thorn. Does that make some sense? Like that? So it's a very sophisticated system. It's not something that just in 2 minutes you get by. As you can see, you have 22 pages sitting in front of you, or maybe 23. That's the first 9 chapters. And all we've done is basically take the main points that are being made. There's more finer points than this, but the main points of, major shlokas or groups of shlokas. Right? And then you get this. So this is also just so that for our reference, if there's something we're looking for, we can look in the table of contents, we can find it, right? You generally find this maddening. You want to know something where it is in the book, you can never find it, right? Because the details aren't that much. So, you have to forgive that, but... Yeah. Okay, so then the first chapter... Okay, does that make some sense why we're using this book? Because you're going to run into it. Devotees say we don't follow Manu. But the reason we're studying this is because Prabhupada says we do. And then they'll bring up the quote that on a morning walk some devotees came to Prabhupada and says, in Manu Samhita it says this, and Prabhupada said, according to Manu Samhita you're unfit to study it because you're a malecha. So then they say, see, we don't follow it. That's because the attitude is a malecha. The attitude in dealing with it was malecha, therefore don't deal with it. So the basic point is here is, this class is, if you want to become human, or at least know what it is, then you stay. If you're really worried that finding out what is human life may be a problem for you, then this is the wrong class. Like that. So we're putting a, what do you call it? Statutory warning before it starts. Means after this class, then you will not be able to look at many things the same again. So if you're prepared for that, then you sit here. And if not, then, we're letting you know now. Like that. Because, as I'm mentioning, there's nothing that Manu doesn't deal with. Like that. I mean nothing. It even gets down to homosexuality between men and women, what happens to them, what you should do with them, how you correct them, how you deal with them. So there's nothing that is going on today that's not covered by Manu. Yes? Not exactly the same time. It'll be started later. It's only because the ladies were making agitations, so therefore then it started. Yes, but the men are more peacefully waiting. They were figuring it would start a little later, but we're working on it. Like that. No, because all it is that, see, what it is that the adult courses that are taught in the Vidyapeet is for those who are residents. So to study the same subject matter as a day student, then it's split into two. You have the Mangala Kshetra for the women and the Brahma Vidya Kshetra for the men. Like that. So it's the same curriculum. Like that. Only difference is that the boys will learn all the different ashram curriculums that aren't available to the day students, and in the women's school, then other skills may be learned also, cooking, some other things that aren't taught in the men's school, like that. But otherwise, it's basically, it's the same, academically, it's the same curriculum, like that. So there's no difference.
But the methods of teaching is different, because there's more interaction with this type of position.
Yeah. Means the men, when this goes on, it won't be so much like this. It means like talking and going through and talk. It's more of it'll be given. They're read. There's points that they get from it. You'll discuss it a little bit. There'll be some interaction. But mainly it's just tutorial like that. So for women, then there's a little bit more on the interactive. Otherwise, before it was just going to be the same, you know, but it was seen that the ladies preferred it more in this way. Okay, so in other words, we're not saying this as a method of it itself will give perfection. We're not saying that by perfection, that one perfects one's life by perfecting Varnashram. We're not saying that perfectly following Varnashram makes you better than someone else who's not. Right? What we're saying is that it's an excellent tool for a human being to engage all of their mundane needs in the Lord's service. Right? Because if you look at it, anartas are a problem. Right? So how do you get rid of anartas? Right? You can either just intellectually get rid of them, if it's possible, and if not, then you have to engage them. Right? So the process of engaging means then you engage it in the Lord's service. You can't speculate. You speculate, you won't get the reaction. Because we always have to remember, God made the universe, not modern man. That always has to be remembered. And it doesn't matter if modern man is wearing tilak and neck beads and has been initiated. If one opposes the scriptures, that area where you oppose the scriptures, those areas you will find don't work so well. Why? Because God made the scriptures to tell you how it works. Does that make some sense? That's the whole point. The scriptures are made, it's just like you buy a machine, you get a little pamphlet with it, how it works. You can say, ah, this is bogus, but you can't get the machine to work any way other than what that pamphlet says. Of course, if you don't consult the pamphlet, you may only work out, you know, a small portion of all the uses that you could get out of that machine. So that means the modern people, they get very little out of their human form of life in the way of fulfilling human needs, even on the mundane platform. You take what the materialists eat, it's not very excellent. You know, what they wear, it's not very excellent, right? You take some heavy, thick cloth, right, that stays together whether you wash it or not, whether you wear it for a year straight or not. Right? And you sew that together, that's called fashion. Right? And then, now you touch it, now let us try. You go down to your sari shop, and you have the guy take the pair of jeans and throw them out nicely so they float down, right? And then you take your finger and run it down and feel the material, you know, and then reach over and feel one of the saris, which is nicer. Right? So that's the point. They don't, even though they're dedicated to enjoyment, they don't know what it is. So that's the point, because they don't know what a human being is and what a human being wants. So that's the problem. Is this kind of clear, what we're talking about, or what we're... Okay. So then, on the laws of Manu. So, yeah. This final point on that is that therefore, it is by the chanting of Hare Krishna, by following the devotional process, and by then engaging one's needs that are outside of the Bhagavata Pancharatrik system in the Lord's service through the Varnashram, then one can be happy and one can purify one's existence so that the effect of the chanting and all that, then, you get the benefits of it by not being, anchored to the material world. Right? It means the holy name will take you out of the material world as long as you're not interested in the material world. If you're interested in the material world, you'll stay here. Right? Prabhupada mentions you're attached to one rasgula, you'll come back and take birth. Just so you can eat that rasgula. So that's the point. Then how do you engage that attachment to that rasgula? You engage it in the Lord's service. So by that, then you get more attached to the service than you do to the mundane aspect of the rasgula. Does that make sense? So that's how we're approaching Varnashram. Therefore, you see that where we know it applies, it's easy enough, it's not stuff that's bound by time, place, and circumstance, then we're using them. Right? We're not saying kings have to wear crowns and swords, but Manu doesn't describe that. Manu just deals with principles. Like that. Those are the social application of these customs. This makes sense? And as we go through here, you'll actually see that what's in here is what you've been reading in Prabhupada's books. But Prabhupada's taking that part of it, just the part that actually applies to the devotees. And the other parts, then, sometimes he mentions portions of them for social, organization. And sometimes he doesn't. So this will actually, as we go through, it'll seem very familiar. Like that. Even that it's Arthashastra, Niti Shastra, all these aspects of civics, and also the Puranas, all the histories you hear, those are all based on this. So there's two main ways of learning the Dharma Shastra. One is through directly from the laws. The second is through the histories. The histories is generally the more recommended way, because then you see it practically applied. Because academically studying it, you have everything all in one place, like you have every scenario that could possibly happen all in one place. So for someone who's administrating that, in a day he sees so much of this, it's fine for him. For a common person, it's not. They may run into one of those examples once in their life. So to them it seems like it's overdone. I've even heard devotees read this and they're freaked. Because it's meant for those who deal with the law. It's not a book for just common study. So therefore, we're approaching it where that which is applicable to us then is being dealt with. Either it's applicable by principle, the principle is very obvious to see, or the detail is going to give a good application of that, though we may apply it differently. Like that. Does that make some sense? Like you see, Ramanujacharya wears tilak. He wears different tilak than us, but he wears tilak. So the principle stays. Though some of the details may adjust. Does that make sense?
Okay. I was reading some information in Manu on the internet, and one of the professors from Harvard University says that Manu Samhita is a real, this is a quote-unquote, real eye-opener. Either you appreciate it or you throw it away really, really far.
Yeah. Because it's Manu, he's in your face. That's the thing about it. There's nothing he doesn't get into. Like that. That's what I'm saying, is that, if anybody's too worried about finding out too much, then this is the wrong class.
And he was a
Gauri. Yeah, he was a Gauri, yeah. The British used it because they saw it was the best way to deal with the Indians. So they established the laws in India based on it. Like that. That's the interesting thing. They even saw it was the superior system for dealing in this culture. Like that. So then the first chapter then establishes the origin of the law and the elements that you're going to be dealing with in the law. Right? Because when you want to establish the scenario, then you have to say, what are all the elements that are in there? Does this make sense? Like that. It means, like, let's say we're going to cook. So therefore, you have to know that there's going to be vegetables, there's going to be grains, there's going to be spices, you're going to have ghee, you're going to have pots, you're going to have things to stir with, you're going to have stoves. So many different things are there. So you have to know all those different groups of things. Then knowing all those different groups of things, then we can start to say, okay, the pot goes on the stove, then the ghee goes in the pot, then the spices go in the ghee, then the vegetables. Then you can start to see how they relate. So the first chapter establishes that. Like that. Second then establishes Brahmacharya and the samskaras. Means all the samskaras up to marriage. The third chapter will describe marriage and the preliminary aspects of grihastha life. The fourth and fifth will describe the duties and everything of the grihastha life that is there, the ways of making their money, the ways of interaction, hosting guests, dealing with their house, interacting with family members, all these different things. The sixth chapter will deal with vanaprastha and sannyas and what is the actual attitudes and moods and when you know that this is the proper thing to do. Seventh chapter then deals with kings, how they set themselves up, you know, to run a kingdom. Then eighth chapter deals with the laws that the king must deal with in his court, like that. What is the moods and attitudes and all that. And that will be civil law. Yeah, I think it's civil law and some of criminal law. Then, yeah, no, civil and criminal law he'll deal with there. Ninth chapter will deal with domestic law, so law of inheritance, laws between husband and wife, laws of children, like that. How do you establish what is a child? Who is the one who will get inheritance? Like, because nowadays people fight over the children, like that. Some cases they can fight, some they can't. You know, I've seen children where their mother and father are married. I'm talking devotees. Mother and father are married, they have a child. Then they split up, they both remarry. Then the child goes with the mother, and the father goes, remarries. Then the mother, after that, when she marries, and that breaks up, that child is now with the stepfather. So that child lives with the stepfather and not with the mother or with their original father. Right? Like that. This is devotees. Generally in these things I don't quote karmis so much. That's why we're so strong on this, because this is devotees. So when devotees say these things don't apply, you know, it applies very much. So how do you decide who gets? How can they fight? Who can fight? You know, you have to have. You know, there has to be a reason. Why would somebody get the inheritance? Right. All these different things. So all these different laws are there. Then the 10th chapter deals with, now what are you going to do if things aren't ideal? How you make your money if things aren't ideal? Right. So economics, if it's not running properly. And it also deals with the whole system of Vanashankara. Means about unwanted progeny, that what is the problem with them, what difficulty they make. Then the 11th chapter deals with prayaschitta, you know, which is not so much what we get involved in. And but there are some essential elements that are there in the consciousness that then show what the devotees would be looking for in their trying to free themselves from material entanglement. And then the 12th chapter then deals, like at the end of the Gita, gets all into the modes of nature, transmigration of the soul, all the different species of life, how you move through them, why you be born into them, what modes are there, like this. So it deals with that. And it shows how that if one then comes to the transcendental platform, then you perfect life. So it starts from Krishna, comes down, and it goes back to Krishna. So that is the somano. Okay. So then we see here, and then in page one of the contents, not page one of what the contents are referring to. Yeah. Okay, so these when I say chapters, it means the discourses. It means the exchanges. So the discourse one then is on the creation, the origin, the sacred law, the invocation, which we'll go through when we finish this. So we're familiar with the whole work. Then the next thing we'll do is go through what we call the bindu, which means the selected main verses from the whole text. It's about 60 some pages, but then since this you know, is being presented for the women, then there's some extra verses that'll be in there, so it'll add a few pages. So it'll be around 70 pages, like that, of information. No? 78, something like this. So that will be next. Then we see, you know, actually the details that are going on in here, but still the essence. Then after we've gone through that, so we're very clear of the Vaishnava angle on the work, then we'll go through what we call the lagu, which means then it's the full work that applies for a general situation, like the extreme details of, you know, the kings when they deal in war and other things like that. Those things we won't deal with. But just the principles on which, you know, justice is administered and those things, that would, in other words, the things that would apply in our lives, we'll deal with that. So that's the level. Like that. So we'll go through this basically three times. You know, one is this outline, one is the essential verses, and then one is the full work. So when we, as we, from here, we'll just go through this. It means, you know, we'll get how much we get through now. Then you can familiarize yourself with it and make it easier next time. But once we actually get to the works themselves, then you'll have to read something beforehand so that when we speak on it, it will be more familiar. Does that make sense? Because we don't want to spend a long time in one place like that. So if you're already familiar, then we can point out the essential points and everything. Is this clear? How we'll learn this. Okay. So the invocation then shows that the sages have come to Brahma and their purpose is to learn how to connect the mundane duties to Krishna. Right? Because Dharma Shastra is known, but how it's done in such a way it connects to the Lord. So that's why they approach Brahma. He's the only one that knows. Others know the laws, but they don't know how to connect it. So that's why they, so that's in the invocation. So then after coming to Brahma, then Lord Brahma starts to narrate. We can see that he goes down to the, you know, where it says on this thing, item is down to 32, when Bhrigu takes up the recitation on the second page. So what he describes, as we can see, is the creation, like that. And this is the primary creation, which is known in the Puranas as Sarga, or the primary creation, meaning the creation that Krishna does. This is Krishna's creation. Then the secondary creation towards the bottom of the page and up to when Bhrigu speaks is the secondary creation. That's what Brahma himself does. Right? We see those two? Okay. So now we'll start with what his first point. So then his first point is that Karanadakshay Vishnu, then he creates everything. So we see here it goes Karanadakshay Vishnu, then Garbhadakshay, and then the actual field of activities. So this universe existed in the form of darkness, wholly immersed in deep sleep. Then Karanadakshay Vishnu appeared, dispelling the darkness. He who is beyond the range of the senses shone forth of his own will. He, desiring to create beings, first made the waters and placed his seed in them. So this is all the Karanadak ocean. And the seed means the golden seed, what comes out of his pores. What he breathes out comes out of his pores, the golden eggs. They're called the Hiranyagarbha. So it both means the universe, it also means his mentality of creation. So that's why, because it's creation, then in the universe, Brahma is also known as Hiranyagarbha. Right? Because he's born in the golden womb. So he's born on the golden lotus, and this is a golden egg. Right? So this is the similarity. Then Garbhodakshay Vishnu enters the universe. That seed became a golden egg, then he entered it, the creator of the world. As the water, Nara, is his residence, Ayana, he is named Narayana. From Karanadakshay Vishnu was produced Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Then we get down to the field of activities that we function in. The Divine One resided in that egg for a year, then he divided it in two halves. He then created... He then created all these things that are coming after it. Heaven, earth, the middle sphere, the eight directions, and the Garbhodak ocean. So he divided it in two halves. He fills half of it with the Garbhodak ocean. Then he has to make heaven, earth, and the middle sphere. Because earth is where the activities happen. Heaven is where you're trying to get to. The middle sphere is what's in between. Does that make some sense? So they're just natural what comes. It means whenever you have two items, there's always something in between. No, there's more. You have more? Oh, you have them over there. Does that make sense? So therefore you have Antariksha, the place where all the ghosts hang out and the Gandharvas, Rakshasas, all that, because it's in between. It's not heaven, it's not earth. You know, just like you have night, day, you have the twilight. So the twilight within the universe between where you perform the activities and when you get the results is the Antariksha. Right? Then the eight directions means because you have to be able to move. And the Garbhodak ocean and where he stays. The mind, then he created the mind, which is both real and unreal. It's real because it exists. It can perceive what is real, but it's unreal in that it has attachment to and creates its own idea of what is reality. So that's the unrealness of the mind. The ego, and the ego having self-consciousness. So the ego, then you're aware of yourself. But on the material platform, you'll be aware of the body. You know, a little subtler, you'll be aware of your mind, and at least like that, your intelligence. But on the top platform, then you're aware of the soul. Right? The Mahabhuta, which means earth, water, fire, air, ether. Those affected by the three modes means that principle that the living entities are affected. And the five senses, sense organs. By these six, the subtle particles of the Mahabhuta and ego, he created all beings. Right? So then taking the ego and the five elements, right? Then Krishna created all those species of life, right? Because they all identify. Like a dog identifies that they're a dog, right? The cat is a cat. This one's everybody has their identity. So he's taken ego and that. So we can see here, if you can change the ego, you change material existence, right? Because material nature is your body is still going to remain material energy, but you change your ego identity. I'm servant of Krishna. You're actually out of the material world. But if your ego is material identity, then you stay in this material world. Does that make sense? Right? So we're just explaining this so you understand why this is in here. Because scholars will say this first chapter is just interpolation. It has nothing to do with laws, why it's here. But how are you going to know how to apply the law if you don't know what you're applying the law on? Like that. So in other words, it's setting up the field on which you're now going to apply those laws and get results. Because Manu will tell you how to deal with all these things. Like that. That's why it's a science. As those six particles enter Ashri, these creatures, the body is called Sharir. Right? So that's how you get the word Sharir. The Mahabhuta's subtle forms and functions with the mind enter the body. Then after entering the body, then the subtle forms and functions means your how you say earth, water, fire, air, ether then has the tanmatras or sight, smell, touch, taste, so they enter the body also. Okay. The world comes from these seven, the six plus mind, the gross from subtle. So when you take those six, then then you get the body. And then you add the mind, then it starts to work. Because the mind is actually where you decide, I want this, I don't want that. Ego just identify with it. But then you have to apply that ego. That's the mind. Right? I identify myself, yes, okay, I'm a very aristocratic person. So then, now, but how do you prove you're one? By having aristocratic tastes, the way you behave, the way you dress, the way you deal. So that's all the mind. Right? Because otherwise ego is not enough. Right? So that's why even you identify yourself as a devotee, that's not enough. You have to do it. So that means your mind has to be engaged in devotional activities. Is this understood? We always have to remember, since this material is a reflection of the spiritual, by studying it in the right way, you can understand the spiritual. But that's why you have to understand it from authorities. Otherwise, one will speculate and one will just entangle oneself. So that's the point. It's just like you don't give kids knives. It's dangerous. Knives are great. You can do so many nice things. But you give it to a kid, they'll kill themselves. Right? So that's the point. The laws of Manu are a knife. Like that. You can do wonders with them, or you can completely mess yourself up with them. Like that. Okay. The world comes from these seven, the six plus mind. Okay. Yeah, gross from subtle. Means gross always comes from subtle. So depending upon you want to change what somebody does, you change what how they think. What is their values? That's how it works. So that's the point. If the mind accepts it, it changes immediately. If the mind doesn't accept it, it doesn't change. So it always goes from subtle to gross. You can always tell what a person thinks or anything by what's external. You can always tell by that. Very easy. which place in the sequence an element occupies, that many qualities it has. Right? It means air has, ether has one quality, air has two, fire has three, water has four, earth has five. Right? Because they all go with the tan matras, and the senses. Ether has one, it only has the quality of sound. Right? But air has sound and touch. Right? You can hear wind and you can feel it. Right? Then fire has sound, touch, and form. Then water has sound, touch, form, taste. And earth has sound, touch, form, taste, smell. So each one as it comes out, it has more. Like that. So these five elements, the five senses, and the five sense objects, they all go together. Right? Because that's 15 out of 24 elements. Right? So it's a major thing. And that's all held together by the mind. So the mind controls all those 15. So that's why it's so important. As the Lord created the universe, so the Veda describes. So, the Veda says, how the Lord made it, that's what the Veda says. The Veda doesn't say something different. And the Lord doesn't create it differently than what is said in the Veda. Because He writes the Veda. Right? It means the manufacturer makes the item, makes the book. So, you can say, as it was created, the book says. Or you can say, as the book says, it was created. Right? Because they have a plan. Okay, we want to make this. So therefore, they could write the book first and then create it. Right? Does that make sense? Therefore, Veda is apurusheya. It's always there. But the universe manifests and unmanifests. So it's always present. He, the Lord, also created the gods, the sadhyas, and the eternal sacrifice. For sacrifice, the Rig, Yajus, and Samavedas appeared from fire, wind, and sun. So those come from these because all your energy is coming out of these. These actually make everything work. Fire, wind, and sun. He then desired to call into existence, then. He created all these, and now he's going to call into existence more. Now these are the gross stuff, the main things, and now it's going to be subtler things. Or things within those. Time, stars, planets, rivers, oceans, mountains, plains, and uneven ground. So time is then what you're going to do things. Stars, then they influence that, the nakshatras, they establish that also. Planets, then they influence the living entities. Rivers, oceans, mountains, plains, and uneven ground where people live or don't live, or what's proper or improper for the different situations in which you're going to do the things that the time, the stars, and the planets say you should. Austerity, speech, pleasure, desire, anger, and the whole creation. Right? So we see of this austerities first. If that's there, the speech is proper, pleasure comes. Desire you can deal with, anger you can deal with. Moreover, to distinguish actions, then, he separated pious and impious, and the pairs of opposites such as pain and pleasure. So this is the point where Manusamhita now, where this is the point where now we hit Manu, the laws, right? Means it showed you came from God, He held the whole creation. Then it got down where He created what's good and what's bad. Right? So that's where now we can tell how to apply the laws. So this is an essential point. All scriptures must do this. They must show where their scripture, the knowledge of the scripture, fits into the creation. Because otherwise, how do you know how to connect it back to God? Does that make sense? So you've seen how everything is created. So now you know that from good and bad, now you can take it back. Does that make sense? That's why creation is always given in the scriptures, so that it always brings it down to whatever is the point that is important for that particular topic. So this one is good and bad, and the pairs of opposites. That's how then mundane culture works. You know, this is good, so it's done. This is bad, so it's avoided. Right? And then how to become entangled in the material energy or get out of the material energy is by attachments to opposites or by tolerating opposites. Does that make some sense? So this is the key right here. Right? From this, then you can operate the rest of the book. Does that make sense? Like that. So then finishing this section on creating the material elements in the field of action. By subtle perishable particles of the five elements, this whole world is created. So everything is made out of these five: earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then?
Yeah,
Tarva is what doesn't fit into the other three. So generally, it's almost more like the Puranas, like that. It gets into all kinds of this, that, and the other thing. Whatever's not in the others are in there. So the others are like cleanly all the topics, you know, because you always have extra stuff. Like in modern literature, you put that in an appendix. So because it has great value and all that, because appendices most people don't read, so it's made into its own book. Though it always talks about the Tri Veda. So generally, people study those three and not necessarily a target. They study four, that's always good, but generally they study three. Because it's more of like applying what's in the other three. Okay, then inherent nature. That nature the Lord allotted to each being is assumed in each later creation. In other words, how He's created it initially. Every time the universe manifests, when He breathes out, it opens up exactly the same way. The nature of all the 8,400,000 species of life is exactly the same. So that also is the thing. There's nothing new. It's the same old stuff. Every humans are the same, dogs are the same, birds are the same, fish are the same. They're all the same. Nothing changes. Because it's already perfect, so there's no need. It's not that it's changing and moving and this. No, it's always the same. That's the fun thing. And then, next point. That assigned to each in the beginning clung to it spontaneously afterwards. So that nature that's given to each. So not only is the species the same, the nature of the species is the same. How it was given in the beginning, that's the way it always is. You know, you take a dog 1,000,000 years ago, a dog 1,000, a dog 100 years ago, a dog today, a dog tomorrow, they'll always be the same. So that's always there. So this idea that modern man is different, that this doesn't apply on them, unfortunately God has a different opinion. Like that. And so does Lord Brahma, because Brahma is speaking this part. It hasn't gotten to Brahma yet. Then, as each season assumes distinctive marks, beginnings take up their fixed nature. Just like summer always has it, you know it's summer because of the heat, you know it's winter because of the cold, you know it's rainy season because of the rain. So in the same way, you know the species of life because of the nature that it has. Then, establishment of Varnashram. So all this is in place. Now you can put it together into a structure. So then, for prosperity, the four Varnas appeared from his mouth, arms, thighs, and feet. So they appeared directly from the Lord. So they're part of the Lord. So that's why in the Daiva Varnashram system, you don't make any distinction that one is better than the other. Like that. That's not the differentiation. The feet, like just what we're going to say, the Lord's feet are less than the Lord's head? No. We worship the feet. Right? You start with the feet. So we don't make that, because Varnashram means it's coming from the Lord's body. Like that. So we see that. Now what is different is when you want to manage, then you have to say somebody's senior, someone's junior. Just like the parents will consider the child more valuable than themselves. But who calls the shots? Right? So in the same way, there's no difference between the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. But depending upon their position, whatever you're dealing, they call the shot and not someone else. Like when it comes to, you know, studying the scriptures and that, the Brahmins say. But when it comes to economics, the Vaishyas say. When it comes to administration, the Kshatriyas say. When it comes to the art, the Shudras say. Right? But of those, when you put them in order, what gets you out of the material world, the knowledge is what gets you out. Therefore, it's superior. The field that they're dealing with is superior, but the living entity is not. Right? Because it's the modes of nature. They just happen to have those modes. So it's modes interacting with the modes. So they're just interacting in that way. Does that make some sense? So there's this overlap. Because we say, oh yeah, they're all equal, then we mush it all together. But they're all equal, but at the same time as they have their position. Like that. Does that make some sense? So that's how it's all put together. So now then the secondary creation. Then Brahma's appearance and duties of creation. So this is still Brahma talking. Dividing his body, the Lord became half male and female and produced Virag. Know me, whom Virag himself produced, to be the creator of this world. So Brahma is the one who's made the world that we see. Because all this that was created before is the blueprint of it. You understand? It means Krishna's created it, but it's not manifest. So he created all the nature, everything, whatever there is, it's all there in blueprint, and it's kept in the lotus, underneath the lotus of Brahma's lotus. So then he does this meditation, and then he takes those blueprints, and then from that he creates. That's why Prabhupada always says he's the engineer. He's not actually the creator. Because it's already been, the blueprint has been given, all the bricks, the cement, the sand, the stone chip, everything's already given. Then he takes it and puts it together. So that's what Brahma does. So we see is that before Brahma's even appeared, all this has been created. But it's not manifest, right, in its gross form. So then Brahma will manifest this.
So that's like the duties of the civil engineer.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's why it says inherent nature. No. No, it means it's already established. So Brahma just gets to take that post and manifest it. Like that. Feel free at any time to ask questions on that if it comes up. Otherwise, at the end, when we get to the end of this creation part, then we'll ask a question. But if something comes up you don't understand, just feel free to
ask. They came out of the
mouth,
arms, thighs, and feet. Does that have anything to do with
their
duties itself?
Yeah, the Brahmins speak, the Kshatriyas protect,
because
the arms protect.
But I don't get the relation.
Means, okay. The material world runs because there's money. Okay, so that means everybody's fed because there's money. Right?
Yeah.
So you put food into the stomach, it distributes it everywhere. Because the Vaishyas, they take care of their Shudras, right? They have to pay their Shudras. Because of the Dvijas, they're the most. And so generally, they deal with a huge amount of the Shudras. Probably, if not a maximum amount. You know? Unless it's, you know, how do you say? And East Bloc, somehow or another, I think everybody worked for the government. But besides those places, then... Besides that, because there were no Vaishyas, so they had to work somewhere, right? So then they have to deal with the Shudras. Then they're going to give tax to the Kshatriyas, and they're going to give charity to the Brahmins. Right? Then that tax the Kshatriyas get, they're going to give charity to the Brahmins. Right? And do welfare work for needy people. You know, which will generally be Shudras. Then the Brahmins, they get money, and they get more than what they need by charity, because the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas are giving in charity. So then they give charity to other Brahmins, and they take care of their Shudras. Right? So the Vaishya takes care of his Shudras, the Kshatriya takes care of his, and the Brahmins take care of theirs. So all the Shudras get taken care of. Then taxes given to the kings, charity to the Brahmins. So we see all the money, original money, is generated from the Vaishyas. But still, that's why it's put there, is even though all money comes out of them, but they're controlled because they're not on the top of the pile. Right? The problem today is the bourgeois sits on the top. So whatever makes money, they'll do. They don't worry if that destroys cultures, breaks down families. It doesn't matter as long as they make money. See, it's just like now. Families are breaking down. But nobody cares. Money is going on. When it breaks down so much that the family is so dysfunctional that there's no economics, people can't work anymore. They can't go to school and learn. All they do is steal or do nothing or live off the government. Then the bourgeois gets worried, we have to do something. So then they try to put in some morality, some this, some that, and reintroduce a little bit of religion in the school so that people will be, how do you say, moral enough and have enough, you know, personal worth that they'll work for their money, that then the Vaishyas continue making money. Otherwise, from the 50s up to basically the 90s, that degradation, you know, didn't matter. Because it makes money. Like that. But as soon as it doesn't, as soon as the economics goes down because of that, you know, then they have to introduce these. So that's why they can't be on the top, because for Vaishya, it doesn't matter what it is, he has to make his profit. Like that. So therefore, if he's trained nicely, he's very religious, he'll do that minimally. But still the tendency is there. Right? You see Yudhishthir, he loses his whole kingdom, but he keeps his word. But generally you'll find in business, people won't do that. They said, yes, I'll sell this to you, and then a guy comes along the next day and says that I'll give you more. Then they'll tell the first guy, oh, I'm sorry, this, that. They won't keep their word because it means less. They'll think, well, what a fool, keep your word and lose the profit. They'll laugh at people like that. So that's the difficult. That's why they're not on the top, though they generate all the money. The Shudras do the work of everybody. They're the maximum amount, but they're not on the top. Because if the Shudras are on the top, then it becomes even worse. Right? Kshatriyas are on the top, then for them it's just control, and they'll over-control. So therefore they're controlled by the Brahmins. But Brahmins, even though they're on the top, they don't actually run it. They don't do the hands-on running, that the Kshatriyas do. So that then controls them. Does that make sense? But more important is that when you get to the brahminical level, you're not trying to control the material energy, you're trying to get out of the material energy. So that's their thing. Then they're controlled then also from that side. You know, above them, then there's the Lord and his devotees. So it's a natural. So each one has their place that without it, the whole society can't run. There's no Shudras, there are no businesses, there are no kings, nothing goes on. Like that. Sages can live in the forest, yes, you can like that. But if you want, you know, fancy things, you want a nice house, the Shudras build it. If you want to live under a tree, you don't have to worry. Right? So basically only Brahminical culture or tribal culture can function without this. Like that. But even the tribals will break up into these four. You know, you always have your witch doctor, and you always have your tribal chief, and you always have, you know, like that. Yeah, like that.
How is it in the blueprint? Are there different subtle creations?
They're coming up. They're just coming up because this is second. They come in secondary creation, like that, where you'll see them manifest, like that. That's just now coming.
Step back when it's about inherent nature and all created beings, and that they can create, then it's fixed. Is this only for creation, or it's also progress? But I was just thinking, when Kali Yuga advances, is it just a drastical degradation that needs to be kind of Kali Yuga in the beginning of next Yuga, or it's actually change of nature?
No. It means you have to understand the different species. Like on this planet, you're dealing with lots of different species of human life. There's 400,000. They're different. The natures are different. They're different species. But humans can all relate to each other. So they can't interrelate. You can intermarriage. Just like you have, I think, 300 species of dogs, but you can practically make any one of them to the other. Because they have an inherent nature that's the same. But besides that, then they're different. Some are more aggressive, some are more peaceful, some are bigger, some are smaller, some, you know, are very strong, some are very weak, some have hair, some don't have hair, you know, like this, all these different kinds of things. So, but they're different species, but they still relate to each other. So here we have different species. So all it is those are just different species, that's all. Because when you mix human beings that shouldn't be mixed, you actually end up with a different species. Right? It means, like you say, Chandala. Chandala is a species of life. Sopacha, Nishada, these are species. Low-end species, but whatever it is, they're species. They're actual species. You take a Brahmin man and a Shudra woman, means this is by nature, I don't mean by birth. You get a Nishada. It's a problem because they'll have brains like inspiration like a Brahmin. But the field they work in is like a Shudra. So they'll make a lot of trouble. Right? Or if you do the opposite, you take a Shudra man and a Brahmin woman, then you get a Chandala. Right? So then that creates a problem. Because there you have the field brahminical field with a Shudra mentality. So that's worse. Right? Because how much trouble can you make in the Shudra field? Right? So therefore it's worse. Therefore, that's why Patiloma is worse than that. But that's a different species. But the point is it doesn't matter. If one becomes a devotee, then that crosses all that. Therefore, amongst devotees, it's considered ekavarna, one brahmin. But still within that, you still have to see, this will come up in marriage, that there's an equal nature. Because otherwise they won't be able to relate to each other properly. Like that. So you do have to check. Though it doesn't matter. Does that make some sense? But they're just different species. So when you get into that, they're just changing. They're just different species. That's all. But they're not stuff. It's just stuff. It's just like also when you combine the people combine things and that. Those are all things that you can do. Just like when you're doing hybriding, you can only go so far, and then generally the plant turns purple, right? And that's the end of the line. You can't do it any more than that. Then you know you've gotten to the end of the combinations. Because all those are species that can be there, but they may be only manifest through that combination. Man thinks he created it. No, it's already created there because you can't do it other than that. Certain trees, you can cut them and just took a branch in the ground and they grow. Certain ones, you cut them, they'll die. Right? So it's already established what you can do, just at least some. So many of the species of life manifest when people do those things. And like that, you understand? And some of them just inherently there. Many of them, they'll disappear because they're higher grade. Bigger animals are higher grade than littler ones. You know, so when you have these big monster birds, you know, if you take a dodo, right? Dodo is very peaceful. You can walk right up to a dodo. You know, one, they're so big, and two, they're very, very gentle. Right? So, but you can't walk up, if you had now you can just imagine you have a bird that's bigger than you, and you walk up to it, and it's not very peaceful. You know, it might decide your lunch. And there wouldn't be a whole lot you can do about it. They can run faster than you, they're bigger than you, they got a bigger beak than you. You know? Does that make sense? Like you have these like lizards, I think, what do they call them? Komodo dragons, right? They're 8 feet long. If there's one of them and there's you and you're big enough, they may not bother you. But if there's two of them, you're lunch. You know, that's it. They're just lizards. They're not crocodiles or not, they're just lizards. You know, like the thick pickies on the wall, they're just a little bigger. So therefore they have some qualities. So generally you see these are the ones that start to go, all these peaceful species and higher grade species like that. And then they all go and you leave the more rough and ready ones. Like that. But those are manifest again, because originally they're all manifest from human beings. Like that. Yeah. Well, ekavarna means that you're not distinguishing that one is really better than the other. They're all just devotee. Devotee is the varna. But within that, everybody's got to do something different, right? If everybody decided they're all going to wash, okay, all 700 devotees here in Mayapur are going to wash the same pot for Radha Madhava, it won't work. You know? So therefore, everybody does different things. It's just in other words, it's not, you're not fixed by that aspect. Because if you take that, then classes can only be given by Brahmins. Like that. That doesn't mean second initiated, because that's a pancharatric system. That means someone who's got it can do that. This means those who by material nature have the brahminical quality, only they can give a class. The only ones who can do any administration are there. The only ones who can do business are here. The only ones like this. So devotees don't work on that. You know, time, place, and circumstances, who's best suited, and whoever you have, then everybody can do anything. But still, you have to see is that if you're going to do the brahminical duties, these are the qualities. If you're going to do the kshatriya, these are the qualities. The vaishya, these are the qualities. Shudra, these are the qualities. Like that. Because that's just anyway. It's just like if you want to cook rice has a nature, and you have to do it in the way the rice wants. You can't make it up. Oh, we're devotees. We don't care about the rules. We just chant Hare Krishna. You know, are we going to get rice? No. Who knows what we're going to get? You know? So that aspect still remains because you're dealing with material energy. But as far as the consciousness goes, then you're dealing with one, you're just dealing with devotee. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Like that. It's everything. That's the whole idea is in there. Then you start to analyze how things work. That's the whole idea is how does it work? Then you, even in your own life, how does it work? You know, how does it function? Like you're just taking just the grammar. You're doing this work on the grammar. You know, so then it means you have three aspects of verbs like that. Not so well known, but you have intransitive, transitive, and dwitransitive or ditransitive. Means intransitive means it doesn't do anything, it just is existing. Right? Then like he is walking. But the walking's not doing anything. He's existing while he's walking. Right? Like that. You know, then single is he walks down the road, so he's getting it. Or he walks to the temple, he attains the temple. Like that. But while chanting, he walks to the temple. Right? So then he's getting his chanting done and he's Now the interesting thing about this, that's intransitive, then it doesn't actually accomplish anything. So then, if you look at it, then is, you know, you are lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. Right? So what's happening? He's lamenting. He is lamenting. But his lamentation is of no value because it's not accomplishing anything. Right? So if you look at it from the grammar, there's so many more deep things you can get. So that's the idea, is if you can start to analyze what's going on, you can analyze and put this into your life and analyze what's going on.
So is
this the verb? Yeah, is the verb. Is actually the verb. It's not. He is walking. Walking is not technically the verb. Because verb is, you could either look at it from the walking is actually an adverb to is. It means the state of existence, he's walking. You know, just like you say a lotus, blue lotus. It's a lotus, but it's a blue lotus. So he's existing, but he's walking. He's walking existence. But actually, technically, it's the person is doing the walking. So it's the walking person exists. Technically. You know? So that's the difference, is that looking at it this way, then it works in the philosophy. While in the modern, it's just some way to kind of put it together so that you can communicate. But it's not actually, there's no particular purpose in communication. But the Vedic concept is that you're supposed to communicate something of value. So that means the philosophy or the culture. So that being created by God, it works on the same principles. Doesn't matter what the subject. So therefore, the language also has to be able to bring out that philosophy and culture. So we wouldn't say the walking person is, but that's actually what is going on. You know? So Sanskrit will say that. Many languages of the world will say it like that. Some don't. Some are in between, like pure, like that, like Sanskrit, and some of them are kind of in between. And then you have English, like that. Okay, is that okay? No. So that was just as an example, is how it can apply in so many ways. It's just that you never thought of before. That's the whole idea. Is that. You learn this science so you can apply it, but in learning the science, then, you know, life's not going to really be the same, because then you'll actually know what's going on in it. You know? So then in applying it, you're getting the result, but at the same time is in your knowledge, you know that the result isn't actually why you should work. Right? You should work because it's pleasing the higher authority. It's pleasing Krishna. Right? That's why you should work. Results come because if you do this, you get that. But you're not doing this because you're going to get that. But because you want that, therefore you should do this. But now, because you have knowledge, then you're doing this to get that because it actually pleases Krishna. So either a lower stage, you're going to offer that to Krishna, or you're just going to be doing it for Krishna, you'll get that anyway, because you've done this. Does that make some sense? So this is the system. So this is how you liberate yourself from the material existence. That's the science. So in other words, what Prakashananda Saraswati sannyasis were doing in Varanasi, you're finding out here. Just a slightly different application. But it's the same principle. They engage their renunciation in detachment, they get out of the material world. You engage attachment, you know, in Krishna's service without attachment, you get out of the material world. So that's the process. Okay, secondary creation. Okay. Then Brahma speaking. Then performing austerities, I called into existence 10 great sages. From his mind and different parts of his body, he created all his sons. Because he did all this in his mind, with his mind. So when it says he throws off a body, it means a subtle body. Like that. Brahma did everything from his mind. And that, because the photo, then it's real.
It's funny because in law school, the first time that the lecturer, he tells us the different thing, says, okay, so now I'm about to teach you everything you want to know in law, and there's two ways. But it's like for us going to back on it as a goal, for lawyers making money as a goal. So he says, so either you can, you know, do really well and achieve your goal and be stinking rich, or you can go pro bono and, you know, just lose it all. So it's your choice. But everyone's like, okay, let's see what the knowledge is.
then by austerity, he created, and then now we're going to get what was created. 7 other Manus, gods and great sages of measureless power, because one of the sons was Swayambhuva, right? So he was the first. So then, 7 other Manus, gods and great sages of measureless power. Okay, so you get the Manus, the gods means all the demigods, and great sages. So that's everything up, right? We haven't gotten down to the earth yet. So you had Brahma, Brahma's sons. Then then you get the Manus, the gods, and the great sages. So Manus are going to establish the humans. The gods are going to be the demigods that control the universe. So then by sacrifice, they'll be pleased and they give back. And that knowledge will be gotten how to do that by the great sages. Does that make sense? Then, after that, then yakshas, rakshasas, paisachas, gandharvas, apsaras, asuras, nagas, and the manes. Manes means the forefathers. Lightning, thunderbolts, clouds, rainbows, meteors, comets, and heavenly lights, because all those also deal with omens and everything. Kinaras means ki means what, and nara means person. So kinara means what kind of person is that? Like the kinaras are like people with, you know, human bodies but horse heads and stuff like that. So those are kinaras, like that. Monkeys, fishes, birds, cattle, deer, men, and carnivorous beasts. Worms, beetles, moss, lice, flies, bugs, insects, and all immovable things. Thus was the creation produced, each being by the results of its own action. So it means, in other words, the means Krishna's already created the species, but now it's been created, it manifested, because you got, the living entity got that body because of what was their previous work. So therefore, somebody became the sages, somebody came the yakshas, somebody came the worms and beetles, somebody became the, like that. You know, because you understand the difference between the two manifestations. It means one is before, it's just created. This is the way a beetle is going to act. Now this soul acts in such a way, he becomes the beetle that's manifest. Like that, you know. Yeah, yeah. Like it's silk, smooth, you know? Silky, smooth. And frogs, their skin is silky, smooth, right? Because you steal silk, you wear it. So frogs have a natural silky skin. That's frogs, not toads. You know, toads must have stole potato sacks. Something like that. Okay. So that's now he's manifest those species of life. Now the birth and conditions, how that comes up. Whatever act belongs to each creature, I will declare, as well as their birth. So there's those born from the womb. Cattle, deer, carnivores with two rows of teeth, rakshasas, paisachas, and men. So those are born from, those species are all born from the womb. Right? So this is, means, yeah. Then, huh? Paisachas. Paisachas are ghosts. Like that. They're a kind of species like that. They're not exactly, yeah, they're in that category of ghosts, but they're just special. But they have their families and all that, and they're you know, the women like to sit up in trees, coconut trees, and stuff like that, and when unassuming men come by, then they come down and offer them something, and if they take it, they take them up in a tree and eat it. Like that. So, you know, these are paisachas. Those born from eggs. Birds, snakes, crocodiles, fish, tortoises, and similar terrestrials and aquatics. Those produced from hot moisture. Stinging and biting insects, lice, flies, bugs, and all such others. Those growing from seeds, slips, and shoots. Annual plants bearing flowers and fruits, perishing after the fruit ripens. Those bearing fruit without flowers are called vanaspati. Those bearing both, vriksha. Like, so trees that are some called vriksha, but that means because they give flowers and fruits. But it says vanaspati means they give fruit without flowers. They just straight. Like you see a jackfruit, it just gives, there's no flowers, it just gives fruit. So you have trees like that, and then you have the ones that give flowers, then they give fruit. These plants possess internal consciousness and experience pleasure and pain. From Brahma to these immovable creatures, all are subject to birth and death, dissolution and recreation. So this means, okay, now it's been manifest, now it'll be destroyed, you know, partially every day, and then recreated. So that's the next part. After creation, the Lord repeatedly destroyed and recreated the universe. When he awakens, the world stirs. When he slumbers, the universe sleeps. Dissolution. When he sleeps, the corporal beings desist from action, their minds inert. When sweetly and contently slumbering, everything becomes absorbed in him. So when the Lord takes rest, then Brahma, all the demigods, they go to sleep, and all the living entities basically, you know, on the lower planets, then they all get dissolved and get absorbed in him. And then they become manifest again in the next creation. And then on the bigger scale, then when Garbhodakshaya Vishnu rests and breathes in, then all the living entities, everybody goes in. And then when he breathes out, then again they come out. For him, it's 3/4 of a second, and for us, it's a lifetime of Brahma. So that's 311 trillion years. So when you get up to the top level, that's 3/4 of a second. Yeah, yeah. Means you have all levels of it. Means at the end of every cycle of the four yugas, there's a dissolution up to the earth, including the earth, like that. Then at the end of a manu, then it goes up to the heavenly planets. Means when Indra changes, the manus, Indra, Varuna, all these main demigods, they all change 14 times in a day of Brahma. So when they change, then there's a dissolution up to Indra's planet, the heavenly planets. Then when Brahma goes to sleep at the end of his day, then there's a dissolution up to his planet. So that means Maharjana Tapa also get destroyed, but all the sages and everybody go up to Brahma Loka to rest. Right? So they all get to sleep out, you know, a sleepover at Brahma. A slumber party at Brahma's. Like that. Recreation. When the soul enters into vegetable or animal seed, then the soul enters into vegetable or animal seed, assuming a new body. Thus he, by awakening and slumbering, revives and destroys the creation. Then Lord Vishnu is the origin of the sacred law. After the Lord taught these institutes to me, I taught them to the other sages. Bhrigu will now recite to you these institutes, having heard them from me. So then Bhrigu takes up recitation now. In other words, he's now told how the whole thing works, how the creation, dissolution, all the elements are in place. Now Bhrigu is going to say how they're going to work. You understand? So the first thing he's going to say the elements that you're working with, and then from the second chapter he'll actually say the work itself, what work you're going to do.
Is the eldest son?
He's amongst them, then he's respectable, you know? Means they're all respectable, but he's a Brahmin, because some of them are Kshatriyas, like that. Then of them, you know, he's a married man, he's a you know, the teacher of the demigods, like this. So therefore, naturally, he's the one who would speak to the sages, because amongst the Brahmins, then those in the Bhrigu line are considered the top. They have different, their rituals and everything is slightly different than everybody else. Like that. So those who come in the direct line from Bhrigu are considered special. So then it's natural that he would be the one to speak. But if you went like transcendental, then naturally Narad would speak. So that's why for us, is we're interpreting all this in light of what Narad Muni speaks in the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Yudhishthira, because that's the essential point. It's just like the Mahabharata's 100,000 verses, but the Srimad Bhagavatam also gives the whole Mahabharata, but just in a few chapters. So those chapters are how we interpret the whole Mahabharata if we read the Mahabharata. Is that mood, that direction. So we know they're devotees, we know they're doing. So many times they act as if they're just ordinary people. But we know that they're not. So that's shown by the Bhagavatam. Because all those points are manifested. You know, just like we were reading. The Draupadi saying, you know, how could God do this? He must not be in control. Yudhishthira says, you're speaking atheistic philosophy. Don't doubt God. Says, I've never doubted God, just I'm in a bad mood. Like that, you know. So then you see that's the real point. Because she's just upset with this. She's just upset that Duryodhana, who's such a rat bag, is sitting in the seat and they're out in the forest. Like that. So that's why she's actually upset.
And also, she feels that Yudhishthira is not properly honored. He's not really
given
the recognition that he deserves.
Yeah, that's it. He's the emperor, so he should be. But in the pastime, it comes out as if they're ordinary. Just like Krishna comes there and just says, hey, you know, how is this? You're out in the forest, let's get him, let's go, we'll destroy him, we'll this, we'll that. You know, and if only I had known, then I would have, you know, stopped this and all these different things. It's kind of like, you know, it's just the pastime.
But then she feels more protected when he makes those comments.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, so this whole thing, it's all just part of the Lord's, he's just having fun. So that's the ultimate. That's why it's taken seriously as our social system, but it's not taken seriously as the perfection. Because Krishna, when he comes, he plays the perfect part of someone running in this system. But at the same time, his perfection is not perfecting the system. Because he says he doesn't actually come to destroy the demons and establish Dharma. He comes to associate with his devotees. But his devotees follow that Dharma. But most important is that they're following it to please him. So actually the essence is pleasing him. It's not the form of it. Like that. That's the subtle point of law. Is that actually it's the pleasure of Krishna that makes it useful. Not the law itself. But since the law pleases Krishna, that's why we follow it. You know, it's just like, okay, you want to cook something nice for a very dear friend, you cook something you know they like. So it's not the thing that's important. It's their pleasure. But now, you will see that you cook it perfectly because you know it pleases the person. Do we understand that? So it's not the thing itself that's important. It's the rasa between yourself and the person. And that they have appreciated that, and the exchange goes on. But to do that, you do this nicely. Therefore, Varnashrama for us is not our main thing. But we know it because it pleases Krishna as a social system. Therefore, we follow it. Because it makes him happy. Otherwise, well, what do we care about this? Like Prabhupada said, we're vegetarian because Krishna, that's what he eats. We take his if he ate, if he ate something else, that's what we'd eat. You know? But he eats vegetarian food. So that's what he cooks. So for us, being vegetarian isn't the main thing. Prabhupada always says, birds are vegetarian, the pigeons are vegetarian. For us, it's we cook what pleases Krishna and take the remnants. That's there. These are just side things to soften up. People are killing other animals simply for the tongue. Huh? They're very hard-hearted. So therefore, if they're so hard-hearted, how will they understand God? Right? That's why it says, Pashupnat, in that invocation of the Bhagavatam. Anybody can understand this science except a meat eater or the killer of the soul. So that could mean, people who eat animals. It can also mean those who kill themselves through impersonal philosophy. Like that. So therefore, because it makes one hard-hearted, you have to be soft-hearted to appreciate Krishna. Therefore, then it's favorable. But it's not being a vegetarian takes you back to Godhead. No, taking prasad takes you back to Godhead. Does this make sense? There's these subtle overlaps, and the subtlety is what we're trying to get at. Right? In learning the subtleties, we will learn all the external manifest details. Does that make sense? But what we're trying to get at is the subtlety. Therefore, sometimes you may wonder, why we talk so much on this? Why don't we just get down to just, do I dress like this or like that? But the point is why you would do that. What is the mentality that dressing like this or that creates? Which one is favorable for Krishna? Why is it favorable? Why is the other one not favorable? Because then you're convinced, and you can convince others. That's why the culture is lost, because people don't know the theory. They can't explain it. When the kids ask why, no one knows. So therefore, it's lost. Like that. So that's why you have to know. You can convince yourself, you can convince others. Right? So this is how one becomes a preacher. It's by knowing the culture and being able to give that to others. That's the actual method.
So it means if you have a strong friendship with someone, even if you're eating well, the potatoes will enjoy it because that relationship is so strong. Mm-hmm. As you eat something really often, which we just won't do as
easily. Yeah. That's why we can see people who don't seem to be following so much of the Vedic culture. They seem to be happy. Other ones who are following aren't happy. Because the main thing is that they're pleasing Krishna. But now, if you follow the system, then you can add to that. That's all. But the most important thing is pleasing Krishna. That's where Prabhupada introduces little at a time. And he puts it there in his books. He says it's there. You can read it's there. If you just keep your eye open, like when we go through these things, you'll see most of these things you've all read in Prabhupada's books. And then after reading this, when you go through, you'll just see this is written everywhere, all this stuff. It's just we're not aware of it. Just like when you learn other branches of knowledge as they come up, then you'll see that's everywhere. So you'll see when Prabhupada says everything's in his books, he meant everything's in his books. He didn't just mean, okay, you're little kids and this is all you're going to get and that's all. Others may say that. Oh, Prabhupada just gave the basic. No, he gave everything. Just even those other persons, whoever says that Prabhupada only gave the basics, means they're not on Prabhupada's level to be able to understand what's in there. Like that. Prabhupada says he gave everything. It's all there. So our study of this is actually so that you'll appreciate what is already in Prabhupada's books. Right? Because up to now, has there been anything that you haven't heard of before? No. Right? But this is put together specifically in Dharma Shastra, so therefore it has a particular flow. So you may not have always thought of it in this way. Does that make sense? But all the information you've always heard about, and the points that I'm making, you've heard about. Right? But you may not have put them all together in one place, because if you put all that knowledge in one place, that's called Dharma Shastra. You put it another place, it's philosophy. You put it another place, it's management. Does that make sense?
Yeah, in this thought, it makes sense because it flows into each following subject. But in the Bhagavatam, you can see devotees are attracted to one aspect and not another because it has no order in your mind.
Yeah, but once you study this, you'll see that order. You can see where it switches. Like that. So it just goes. It means everything's in there. Even ethics, morality is in there. But you have to know what ethics is to be able to identify it. You know? That's the thing. Like when they're talking about the foolish living entity, that's ethics. You know? That's the principle of ethics. Like you see Chanakya, you know, you don't preach to a fool. All of them, they all deal. If it's a Niti Shastra, it has to deal with fools.
It opens up the foolishness.
Yeah, because if you're foolish, then you can't learn anything. Niti means it's pragmatic. Morality has to work because it's on the platform of Pranamoya. It has to give profit. So if you're a fool, you can't function. You can't operate it. Therefore, it's the first topic dealt with.
That's why I said it's easier to find an elephant with the stem of a lotus than to teach a fool.
Yeah. It goes on like that. They'll say, the sun could become cold. The moon could become hot. The oceans could dry up. That's a possibility. But you can never teach a fool. That's impossible. They all start like that. Because it's the first thing. It's the first thing. If you're foolish, you're not pragmatic. If you're not pragmatic, you don't get profit. So even Bhagavatam deals with these points. But it's for the purpose of what's the real profit. The real profit is Krishna consciousness. So then once you see these things, then you see how Bhagavatam is actually the perfection of all knowledge. Like that. Even of spiritual knowledge, it's still the perfection of that. So it's the best of all books. Right? So yeah. So this course is part of the orientation course, which culminates in proving that. Like that. All these different courses that are there, like that, are all to show that Bhagavatam is actually the essence of all the Vedic literature. So therefore, the conclusions given in that are the perfection. That's the whole purpose.
And according to the Nyaya, any repetition used, then that means the point is important. So if one of the teachers did a folio check, they found one of the points in Mana Samhita mentioned in Bhagavatam 7 times.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So probably used it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very much used. Yeah, and then devotees will say, we don't follow it. Point is devotees don't read Prabhupada's books, don't listen to his lectures, like that. And so they actually are uninformed. They've gotten the essence because Prabhupada is very careful to get that across. So basically anybody who's rightly situated knows the essence of all the philosophy. Manu is a detail. So they all know they're servant of Krishna. They all know Krishna's God. They all know the material world is coming from him and is temporary. And is supposed to be used by the living entity in God's service. Right? So they know the relationship, you know, chit achit ishwara, matter spirit and the controller of both. So they know that. So they're knowledgeable. They know that love of Godhead is the perfection of life. Right? And they know that the process is by devotional service, and of the processes of devotional activities, the most important is this chanting Hare Krishna. Every devotee will know that. Even they may not be able to put this all together, but they all know it. Previously, devotees would, this would be the first thing off of their mouth. If you want to know, what are you guys doing? This is the first thing they would say. Like that. You can read in Lilamrita, you know, the hippies in Haight-Ashbury. This is what they would say. This is all they knew. But that all other aspects of philosophy come to this. So even this goes back to the process. So chanting Hare Krishna, then of that, that's supported by Pancharatra, and that's helped by this Vedic system, this Varnashram. So it's just a detail of that scenario. So devotees know that, but then they have a tendency to get stuck that that's enough. You know, they'll have seminars on how to improve your business management, your facilitation, your, you know, anything. You know, that you have to be educated in. You know, the quote that, you know, the big executives and that every, you know, so many months go to these upgrading, they'll quote all that and say our society is not together because we don't do that. But when it comes to the details of devotional service, there's like a blind spot. So it's a problem. Because if you look up education, training, you'll probably see that mentioned thousands of times. It's probably that that was the most important thing. If you're not trained, you know, this idea, ISKCON is supposed to train a class of Brahmins who can then preach to everyone in the world and get them to properly situate themselves in devotional service. That's what it's for. He says it many, many times like that. So these things are going on. Yes. Okay. Oh, now it's 6 o'clock. Okay, well, we got up to here. Bhrigu takes up the section. Okay, we only got 19 pages to go.
Were we supposed to do all this today?
No, no, we weren't supposed to do all this today. No, as, the point is as you go, it'll become easier and easier. So even if we take more time here than when we go through the bindu, it'll be quicker because the points have already there. And once you've gone through the bindu, then going through the lagu will be even quicker. So all it is that we start to see what is going on in the work, then we see how that's applied, the principles of it, then we see the details of application. So that's the method we're using. Right? You're getting an overview of it, so you know what is the body of knowledge. So that's what we're getting by going through this. Then the next is it's principles of application. What's the actual, you know, the main concepts behind it, how it works, and principle details. You know, the ones that really make it work. Because once you know how it really works, then you can add as much detail as you're able to add. But until you know how it works, then you can have so much detail and can't apply it. You know? Does that make some sense? Like that. So that's the method we're doing. So the overall concept, then the principles, working principles, and then the working details. So that's how we're going. Okay, so then we'll continue. So if you read through, then because it just flows, means, and this is just the natural way the verses are put together. And these are basically the themes from the main verses. So it's actually interesting that it just reads on its own because we took each verse separately and made the theme of what it was, either a verse or a group of verses. Then when we had the computer put it together into the table of contents, then you can see, you can just read it as it is. You know, very, so it's a very systematic book. Yeah, a little elaborate. We like it. I don't know if any other publishers would appreciate it, but... yeah. Okay. So end here, and then we'll continue next time from Bhrigu takes up the recitation, and then just take it how far we get. Okay. In other words, there's set basic things. A lesson may take one class, a lesson may take two classes. A lesson for us is not a class, a lesson is a particular body of knowledge. So if it's understood, it may go through quickly, like at the end we might go through lessons very fast, and in the beginning we may go through slow. So it's still... We're still sticking to the Vedic principles of that we move on when you understand it. We don't move on just because it's time to move on, right? And so in the beginning also the first topics will be slower of the 14 books, but as you go then they'll go quicker and quicker because they all work on the same principles. It's just a matter of recognizing how the principles apply in the different subject matter.
So lessons form a unit.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, lessons form a unit of study. Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so then Thursday, same time, same place. Okay, yeah. No, I give that to PT. Okay.